This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and from Jerry Lane Chevrolet. Robin Dow is producing. And we start the month of August with one of our favorite guests, Lamar White of the Bayou Brief. He is a lawyer and is perched from the great city of New Orleans, grew up in Alexandria, and follows Louisiana lore like few others. Again, your number is 877-217-5757, and please send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. And much to catch up with Lamar since his last visit. And unfortunately, over the weekend, the news was announced that Jerry Seppos, the former Manship Dean, died at 75, frequent guest on this show as well, and really one of the fine gentlemen in Louisiana, his adopted home. He was Manship Dean from 2011 to 2018, and he left quite a mark not only here but throughout a career in journalism, which included editorial stints with the Miami Herald and the San Jose Mercury News. He was a bigwig vice president at Knight Ridder, had a long and successful career and a beautiful family, and we wish his daughter Robin well and his wife Karen. And Lamar, I know you had rubbed shoulders with one Jerry Seppos yourself.
I have, yeah, several times. In fact, Dean Seppos is probably the reason that I returned back to Louisiana after law school. He recruited me to go to the Manship School's doctoral program. I lasted all of one semester, but we remained friends, and he was a mentor of mine, and like so many other people, it's just really heartbreaking news.
Yeah, it came suddenly. He had an infection and didn't appear to be in poor health the last time I saw him. And at 75, he's gone. He'll be buried in Miami. There will be a private family service there, but he leaves quite a mark in Louisiana, and he loved his home off Highland Road here in Baton Rouge, and quite often invited people there to visit with him and his family. And I liked him immensely. I thought he was a fine man in addition to being an outstanding journalist.
I absolutely agreed. And just an amazing, I think it's said by Josh Grimm, but just an amazing resume that you would never know. He was very humble, and there's a movie actually about Dean Seppos. The first time I met him, I mentioned it, and he kind of hushed me up and said he didn't really want any attention about that. So,
yeah, he is featured on the big screen in Dark Alliance. I forget who played him, but that was
I believe it was Oliver Platt.
Not many of us have a major motion picture in which we're portrayed, but in his long career, that was probably the thing that was the least favorable about him, and he acknowledged it, and he owned up to some mistakes he made in a report that was really, for the most part, true by Gary Webb. Exceptional investigative journalist who ultimately killed himself, and we think he killed himself. Now, the whole story is amazing, and Dean Seppos was very happy, by the way, that the movie was a bomb. But I've never known anybody else other than Gary Webb for his death to be listed as a suicide, and he was shot twice in the head.
Yeah, that's a little bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a little hard to pull off.
Right.
But and in two different places, too. So, yeah, it's Jerry Seppos was a great man and a fine gentleman, and we're glad he logged a decade in Baton Rouge, and he will be missed.
Yeah, it's a huge loss, not just for the world of journalism, but in particular for the Manship School. You know, the last 3 years, plus Dean Seppos and Dean Martin Johnson, so it's just very sad.
Well, and we're at the start of August, and this is a great month in Louisiana history. Lamar has become, since the death of T. Harry Williams in 1979, the foremost authority on Huey Long, and the Kingfish, of course, was born in this month, August 30th, 1893. Edwin Washington Edwards was born August 7th, 1927, the two most prominent governors in our state's history. And if we look at Southern politics, two presidents from the South, Lyndon Baines Johnson's birthday August 27th, 1908, and William Jefferson Clinton, August 19th, 1946. And a listener notes that today, 8-1-22, is the ninth birthday of Eli Wallace Edwards, perhaps a future governor of Louisiana.
Well, happy birthday, Eli.
Eli's coming. Hide your heart, girl. So Eli has the great initials, E-W-E. And shall we say the last year since Edwin Edwards' passing, he somehow has managed to stay in the news, Lamar?
It's not surprising at all that Edwin remained durably relevant.
Durably relevant. And
right.
I have a feeling we'll be talking about him for a long time to come. He was a one-of-a-kind politician and personality, and God bless him, he would have been 95 years old on Sunday coming. So he made it almost to 94, and he did not live, Lamar, what we would call a life of moderation.
No, but he lived several different lives.
As did Huey Long, and he went away at 42. But what a 42
right.
years he had, and as I stated, you have unearthed all kinds of nuggets about the kingfish.
Yeah, I mean, I've been working on this probably for more than a year, a book about Huey P. Long and his assassination. And it is, again, it's just like Edwin, he's durably relevant, particularly in the aftermath of the Trump presidency and a lot of attention paid to American populism and what that means and what demagoguery really means in America. So Huey is still, you know, very much a central figure in the discussion.
Well, Huey was a populist, and he had a vision. His vision went beyond himself. At the time of the Great Depression, 20% of all construction in the U.S. was going on in Louisiana. That was the kind of vision he had. Now, Donald Trump was a populist from the right, and I don't know that his vision went beyond his mirror.
But I'm not even sure that really it's appropriate to call him a populist, Trump, that is, a populist, although I know people do. But Trump never won the popular vote.
No, he didn't.
And you're right. I mean, it's a very different type of populism anyway. Trump would be considered like a right-wing populist, whereas Huey was definitely mm-hmm. on the left.
Mm-hmm. Well, only two U.S. presidents, and we've had 45 of them. Only two U.S. presidents have lost the overall vote twice, and they were John Quincy Adams and Donald Trump. And he's maybe running a third time, and let's start there. There was a story in the New York Times a few days ago. He has not been on Fox News in a few months, I think almost 100 days. So he cannot survive politically without Fox News, I don't think. So Rupert Murdoch may be the most powerful person in the country, and two of his newspapers, the Wall Street Journal and the New York Post, have dissed Donald Trump in searing editorials. So what's going on with the former president of the United States?
Well, I think that he already pretty much has done a soft launch of his next campaign. But it's not just that he's not on Fox News. I think that really what hurt him tremendously was when he got kicked off of Twitter. That was his platform, you know. So it was a way for him to stay in the news every day. And he no longer has that avenue. And I don't think Truth Social, which is his company, his little social media company, has really caught on the way he hoped it would.
All right. And a listener already has corrected me, saying there have been 46 U.S. presidents. Actually, there have only been 45 men who have been president, because, as we know, Grover Cleveland was president twice. And he won the overall vote three times, won it three times. Trump, if he runs again, could lose again in the overall vote and still win the presidency. Now, Lamar, the Democratic Party, with its nominees, as flawed as they have been, has won seven of the last eight popular votes, but yet counts only five of eight electoral victories. So the Electoral College is the great savior for Republican presidential aspirants. Is that in any time soon going to be changed, or are we going to have the Electoral College for as far as we can see?
Well, I would hope that it would be changed, but I think that it's here to stay, at least for the foreseeable future. Just like the Supreme Court is here to stay. There's no way you can get more justices on the court. I know people want court pack, but it's mm-hmm. the same thing. I mean, it's an institution that's been in, part of the fabric of the country. So,
mm-hmm. Well, CBS News is reporting today that Republicans, if the election were held today, and we are 99 days away from the midterm election of November 8th, that Republicans would have approximately 230 seats in the U.S. House out of 435 members. So that would give them 8 seats as far as a cushion. Steve Scalise says they're going to pick up 50 seats. We'll talk about it with Lamar White when we return. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. We'll go to the phone lines in a bit with Lamar White, the publisher of the Bayou Brief. And he's had two fascinations in recent vintage, the life and times of Huey Pierce Long, who died 87 years ago in September, and Juan Carlos Marcello, the mob leader from New Orleans, who may have been one of the most powerful people in America during his tenure as a mafia kingpin. Again, 877-217-5757. But right now we're talking about the political world, which will change in 14 weeks and one day. Most likely, it appears, the Republicans may very well get the House, may very well get the Senate, but it is not likely to be the slam dunk than it was in 1994 when Bill Clinton took it on the chin, or in 2010 when Barack Obama took it on the chin. If Republicans get the Senate and the House, it'll probably be by a slight majority. And Lamar, is there any way, in your estimation as a political junkie, that the Democrats can change this inertia?
Sure. I think that the decision in Dobbs going to motivate a lot of people.
The abortion decision. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. I think that did change the dynamic in a lot of races. But Democrats are having a difficult time recruiting people in places like Louisiana. I think we have two of our Republican congressmen were reelected without opposition. So we'll see. I mean, it remains to be seen. But it wouldn't be as shellacking like it was in 2010.
And if the Republicans gained the number of seats that CBS projects, that puts them at 230, which would mean 230 to 215. So obviously, if the Democrats were to get another 8 seats, they could hold on in the House. And in the Senate, usually the off-year election is not good for the party in power with the presidency. But in this case, there are more Republicans up for re-election than there are Democrats. And we have the Dobbs decision, which you mentioned, and we also have the gun debate. Most Americans right. are in favor of banning assault weapons, but yet the Republican Congress doesn't want to touch that. And our delegation, other than, actually Bill Cassidy went with his other Republicans on this. They won't even touch any kind of gun safety adjustments.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre and wild that they're not paying attention to the pulse of America on this. I mean, it's even changed the dynamic of the Texas governor's race in many ways. The gun issue, people thought that Beto O'Rourke had sort of shot himself in the foot, pardon the pun, when he said he believed in confiscating people's AR-15s, but couple of school shootings has changed the sentiment for a lot of people in Texas.
877-217-5757 for Lamar White, publisher of the Bayou Brief. Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, you're on with Lamar.
Hey, Lamar. I got a question about Chuck Schumer. Last year, he kind of threatened the Supreme Court, said they're going to pay the price at a rally, got real heated. And yet nothing's ever come of this. I see that they're trying to prosecute Trump for supposedly insurrection, even and yet no one's going after Chuck Schumer for threatening the Supreme Court. Why isn't he paying the price?
Well, was the Supreme Court stormed upon by minions representing Mr. Schumer? Lamar, your thoughts about Lamar comparing Donald Trump and Chuck Schumer?
That's a ridiculous question. Comparing what Chuck Schumer said on the steps of the Supreme Court to the Capitol insurrection that left at least five people dead. Come on, man.
And a listener notes that another one of Lamar's favorite targets of recent vintage is a guy named Ali Akbar Alexander, and his fingerprints were all over that rally, and not so long ago he was sitting in the studio with yours truly on many occasions. Lamar, Louisiana produces another legend of sorts.
Sort of notorious Ali Alexander. He was become a big part of the January 6th hearings, if anyone's been paying attention to that. It's been interesting. But they say he's cooperating.
Will he testify publicly? That'll be a show.
I sort of doubt it.
Mm-hmm. Well, if he does, I think they should introduce him with Sammy Davis Jr.'s Candyman.
That's a good idea.
Didn't President Trump, Lamar, call him Sammy Davis Jr.?
This is what Ali says. He says that when the first time he met Donald Trump, I believe it was in Mar-a-Lago, or maybe it was in Louisiana, he called him Sammy Davis Jr. They had a long conversation, and then Trump invited him to the White House, and he remembered him. But, I mean, in fairness, he does resemble Sammy Davis Jr. quite a bit.
I don't think he sings and dances quite like Sammy Davis Jr. did.
No.
Another listener says he had his own rat pack, though.
Yeah.
All right, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Holly in the Garden District asks whether John Kennedy is in any kind of vulnerable situation with the election 14 weeks away. Based on those who qualified a few days ago?
I hate to say this, but no, he's not in any vulnerable position right now. He's got, what, $28 million in the bank?
Yep.
Yeah.
And he could, of course, spend none of that and probably would win. And he also may very well be running for governor next year. And I would imagine if he got in the governor's race, a lot of people who are looking at that race, and maybe some have even announced, would pull back. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, it would be interesting to see what Jeff Landry does in that situation. Mm-hmm. But Kennedy for whatever, as Mary Landrieu campaigned against him back in whenever that was. I mean, he's run for so many different offices, different parties. We'll mm-hmm. see what he does. But I think he's in probably in no, there's no concerns for this year.
Well, Jeff Landry, I think, would be of those who have indicated they're running. Landry, Nungesser, and Schroeder would be the one most likely to stay in. And over the weekend, another person asked me about this Twitter place where there's all kinds of information about Jeff Landry. And Lamar is the first one to note this to me. It's called Fact Checking A.G. Landry.
Yeah, so it's at AG underscore Landry. I believe they tweeted something like, let's see, I'm on it now. It's like 13,000 tweets in the last year and a half or so.
13,000 tweets. So somebody,
kind of amazing.
Somebody really has it in for Jeff Landry then.
And doing their homework, by the way. It's not just trolling Jeff Landry. Documentation, public records requests. So it's actually really informative. I would recommend taking a look at it.
You know, a lot of times this stuff is done anonymously in some of these sites like Tiger Droppings. These people don't have the courage to tell us who they are. But in this case, do we know who this individual is?
Well, I don't think the individual wants, you know, I know who the individual is and a few other people do. And I think that the person is, is accessible, but does not use their real name on the account.
All right, David.
But, obviously, if they're filing public records requests, you know.
David in Atlanta. David, you're on with Lamar. Good morning, David.
Good morning. I understand Trump's first wife has been buried at one of Trump's golf courses, I think in New Jersey, so he doesn't have to pay any taxes, and he can declare for tax purposes the golf course a cemetery.
Is that true?
Huh.
Yes, it is true.
I've heard the same thing.
Well, talk about working an angle.
Right.
My goodness. Ivana Trump died falling down some stairs, and tragically, she's 73 years old, his first wife, the mother of his three children, and she had quite a life of her own, an immigrant like his third wife, and Donald Trump left her for Marla Maples, and the most libel-proof headline in the history of journalism was in the New York Post when Marla Maples was quoted about their clandestine affair saying, "Best sex I ever had." That's one you're probably not going to be sued over, Lamar.
Right, right.
And Donald Trump did not sue her. He married her. We'll talk more with Lamar White of the Bayou Brief after this quick timeout on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Lamar White is with us, the publisher of the Bayou Brief, for a few more minutes. If you'd like to get in, 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Now, Lamar White, a listener, Terry in Woodville, Mississippi, sends a note saying that Earl Kemplong is another Louisiana politician born in August, 826-95. He died at 65 years old, right after he had won a congressional race, and he had served, of course, three times as governor of Louisiana. And he also left a big mark on Louisiana politics and had an interesting personal life that was immortalized on film as with Paul Newman, of all people, playing Earl Long. And her last name was Davidovich. She played.
It's a great movie, by the way.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was much better than Sean Penn and all the King's Men. But Lola, what was it? Lola Davidovich. She played Blaze Starr. And I said this, and I didn't mean it as an insult. I just meant it as an observation. But I think that someday there will be a movie about Trina Edwards.
Why not? Both the story is amazing. So I can see it happening. She already was a reality television star, by the way.
Yes, she was, the governor's wife. Now, Lamar, she spent some quality time in a town you know well, Alexandria, Louisiana. And our friend and occasional guest, Louis Unglesby, a few months ago lamented, "Where are all the characters? We used to have these great characters in Louisiana politics. And when you were growing up in Alexandria, they had some amazing mayors as far as news they provided. Not all that great for Alexandria, but John Tilly Snyder, Ed Karst, didn't get much better than those guys, did it?
No, it really didn't. And by the way, Earl Long, he died in Alexandria at the at Baptist Hospital. But, you know, they don't make them like they used to.
And maybe that's part of the appeal of Donald John Trump, is that he is... like him or not, he's a character. Now, Bill Huey, about the comments we just made about the last president, says, "If you think that's something, wait till Trump starts charging people to view Ivana's grave." I doubt that he would do that. I doubt it. But he did take the fifth.
I don't put anything past him.
You know, he did take the fifth 97 times when he was deposed in their divorce proceeding. So... it is amazing that he would be the person taking control of her arrangements after her death, because their relationship was in some ways acrimonious. But hey, Jonathan and you.
She accused him of rape.
Yeah, she did. She did. Jonathan and you, Iberia. Jonathan, you're on with Lamar White.
Good morning. I just had a quick comment. I was laughing when you were talking about Sean Penn. Hey, Broderick Crawford did a much better job, and he got an Academy Award.
He did indeed.
For all the Kingsmen.
He did.
Hey,
he did.
Jim, on that one, I'm going to let you go. You have a wonderful morning.
All right. Well, Jonathan, I like that when we go down memory lane. Yeah, he did win the Academy Award for playing the Kingfish, although the character was Willie Stark. And Robert Penn Warren, didn't he win the Pulitzer for that? I think he did.
He did. That way, you know, Robinson Warren won three Pulitzer Prizes, two for poetry and one for All Kings Men.
And you know, there's nothing at LSU to recognize him. There certainly should be, because Louisiana State University was a big part of his life. He won the Pulitzer Prize for his novel. He won a Pulitzer Prize for poetry, two of them, 1958 and 1979. And he was a man who started the Southern Review. So
let's rename one of those Confederate streets after Robert Penn Warren in LSU.
Well, yeah, there ought to be. And there ought to be a statue of Hubert Horatio Humphrey. He was vice president of the United States and a graduate of LSU, for goodness sakes.
Amen.
But he was a Democrat. And today, when you're a Democrat, that's often a bad word. My friend Mark Calvert moved into a nice neighborhood a few years ago, and he said this lady knocks on his door, Lamar, and says, Mark, I just want you to know there's some undesirables living in the neighborhood. He says, what are you talking about? In this neighborhood? She goes, yeah, they're Democrats.
Oh, gosh.
James and Metairie. James, you're on. Good morning, James.
Hey, well, good morning, Jim and Lamar. Good morning to you. Hope you're doing well, sir. You know, you're right. They're demonized. They have done a great job of demonizing Democrats. Some of the things that I hear, you know, Democrats are evil, sons of the devil, and all that sort of thing. Just one quick comment about Trump and his golf course cemetery. The rumor has it that somebody in the back of the crowd, as they were lowering the casket, said, "In the hole." Have a good morning, Jim.
All right, James. Well, let's not make light. This lady, Ivana Trump, can you imagine living with Donald Trump, bearing him three children? I doubt that life was easy for Ivana.
So, and those three children in particular? Yeah.
And then she had the public humiliation of him leaving her for a younger, blonder woman, Marla Maples, and the child that that he had with Marla is rarely seen anymore. What happened to Tiffany? She was my favorite Trump kid. What happened to Tiffany Trump?
Malibu Trump. I don't know.
I miss Tiffany.
But, you know, Ivana was totally out of the spotlight. I mean, completely. We hadn't heard from her at all.
All right. Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Mike. Good morning, sir.
Whatever happened to Boogie Moti? That ran against Edwin Edwards so many.
Yeah, Pookie, Pookie used to do crazy things, even accused Edwin Edwards of being a homosexual. But Lamar White, we talk about characters. Sometimes those kinds of people bring some life to the campaign, and others say, look, this is serious business. We don't need characters like that. We could do without them. But for a day or two, it gives us something to laugh about. And laughter is a good thing. Even if we laugh at ironic things, laughter is good for the soul. And Louisiana used to be a place where our politics often elicited some laughter. But we got a lot of grim people out there representing us now, Lamar.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
And a listener notes that perhaps the grimmest is Clay Higgins, the congressman from Acadiana, who used to be a character that we could smile about when he was doing those, and believe me, those were great presentations, those Crime Stoppers commercials he did. But his primary opponent, the one who has the money, a fellow Republican, Holden Hoggett, was on last week on this show. And Holden is a nice guy, good-looking fella, earnest, but I don't know what got into him. He started attacking Kamala Harris rather than Clay Higgins, Lamar.
I heard the interview and was kind of shocked by it, that the idea would be to run somebody to the right of Clay Higgins, because essentially his interview was just dominated by a long racist rant about Kamala Harris. It was strange.
And I mentioned John McCain, who I view as a great American, and what he went through in Hanoi is terrible, and he did it on behalf of his country, and he had the chance to get out early, but he chose not to do it unless others were as well, those who'd been there longer than he, in that Hanoi Hilton, as they called it. But when he moved to the great state of Arizona after he got out of there, he had lived in Hanoi longer than any other city in the world. He was born in the Panama Canal Zone. He grew up in Virginia. And then he went to the Naval Academy. And then he went off to fight in a war. And he spent many years, as we know, at the Hanoi Hilton. But when he moved to Arizona, he divorced his first wife. He married Cindy McCain, who was one of the richest girls in Arizona. And her daddy funded his campaign for Congress, and he won. And I see nothing wrong with that. And that just really boils me when I hear this stuff about Kamala Harris, quote, sleeping her way to the top. She didn't do anything that John McCain didn't do. And I think the evidence is such that it was so early in her career that she had this relationship with Willie Brown that it's not even a true comment. But yet that is something they criticize her about, and it is highly unfair, and I think it's misogynist, Lamar.
It's misogynist and it's racist, too. I believe that one of the comments was that Joe Biden only selected her because she was a black woman, and he said he was going to nominate select a black woman, which is not true, by the way. I don't know how this stuff gets started or where the sewers of the internet that this guy must, you know, stay in. But it's just it's really unfortunate that this is part of mainstream Republican politics right now.
Well, Steve Dixon, who listens to this show, sent me a note saying Holden Hoggett is infinitely more qualified and a better choice than Clay Higgins. So it will be interesting to see if this man gains traction. As I say, he's a nice guy. I met the man, no doubt about it, and he is an impressive dude. But that was unfortunate to make those remarks about Kamala Harris, and I'm glad that we had a chance to talk about them this morning. But as we look to 2024, will Joe Biden and Kamala Harris be the standard bearers for the Democratic Party?
You know, it remains to be seen, I guess. Right now, my prediction is yes, but there's polling that suggests that the majority of Democrats would rather someone else at the top of the ticket. Mm-hmm.
David Jensen, by the way, another great listener and a fabulously talented man, writes this about Robert Penn Warren, and he is right about this. I don't know about the amount, maybe a little more, but it wasn't much. Jensen says Robert Penn Warren asked for a $50 raise and was denied, and that's why he went off and got a job somewhere else. So,
wow.
Yeah. Ray in Prairieville. Ray, please be brief. You're on with Lamar.
I'll be brief. Thanks for taking the call. I'd just like to know if there's any possibility we could get a third political party, true independent.
All right. We've talked about that for years, but is it really practical? Is it going to happen, or is this just talk, Lamar?
What is this? What did he ask again?
A third party that
a
would be viable.
A third party? Well, there was an announcement just last week about a third party being created. So
We'll see. Lamar, always a pleasure. Thanks. Let's keep going. Talk later. Bye. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. In a few moments, we'll hear from Maya Payne Smart. Do want to note that podcasts for this show are available at WRKF.org and at TalkLouisiana.org. We invite you to go there if you miss a show, if you want to hear again. And also a reminder that our program re-airs at 9 p.m. each night right here on 89.3. And before we go to Maya, it is notable that yesterday we lost Bill Russell. As far as team sports, he was the king in winning championships in 1955 and 56. He, at the University of San Francisco, led the Dons to two NCAA titles, then led the U.S. to the 1956 gold medal in the Melbourne Olympics, and then with the Boston Celtics, number six, Bill Russell, born in Monroe, Louisiana, February 12, 1934. He won 11 championships in 13 seasons with the Boston Celtics. Now, some of us believe Wilt Chamberlain was a superior player, and he's got the numbers to show for it, but as far as championships, nobody did it better than Bill Russell, and he did it with great class and dignity at a time when America was segregated. Hard to believe, but when he went to the NBA in 1956, he was one of five black players in the National Basketball Association. But 88 great years, he outlived Wilt Chamberlain by 25 years, and he had nine more NBA championships, and they were both indelible fixtures for those of us who grew up in the 60s and remember their greatness. And in his last game in 1969 at the Los Angeles Forum, in Game 7, Bill Russell and the Celtics beat Wilt Chamberlain and the Lakers, and he went out a champion. And he goes out as a champion 53 years after his final basket for the Boston Celtics. William Felton Russell. February 12, 1934, Monroe, Louisiana, to July 31st, 2022. And joining us is Maya Payne Smart. And for those unfamiliar with Maya, she is remarkable in her field. And she is an award-winning journalist and literacy advocate. And in her book, she attempts to provide a step-by-step guide to helping children thrive as readers and as learners. The book is called Reading for Our Lives, A Literary Action Plan from Birth to Six. Currently, there are 43 million Americans between ages 16 and 65 who cannot read well enough to complete a job application, follow a bus schedule, understand a rental agreement, or parse choices at the ballot box. And it all starts in those formative years. And Maya Payne Smart, you are on the forefront of how we can do better and why we're not doing a very good job right now. How in this great land of ours are we in this kind of a mess when it comes to literacy?
I think it's just not really on a lot of people's radars. Those of us who can read and can read well often take it for granted that everyone reads at some point, that everyone gets the level of literacy skill that they need to thrive. But it's just absolutely not the case. And the reality in schools is that when kids fall behind, it's really hard to catch them up. Schools aren't designed to provide the kind of intensive tutoring and remediation work that many kids need in order to become strong readers. And particularly as they age into middle school and high school, there are fewer people in the building who've been trained to provide that foundational, basic introductory reading instruction.
Maya Smart is with us. She and her family live in Milwaukee. She serves as an affiliated faculty in the Educational Policy and Leadership College of Education at Marquette. Her website is mayasmart.com, and her latest work is Reading for Our Lives. Now, 43 million Americans, that's a big number. That's well over 10% of the population, basically functionally illiterate. Is it really hard to catch up when a kid does not get the adequate instruction at those formative years?
It is. And as they age, it's harder and harder because there aren't people in the building who know how to teach those foundational reading skills. A high school English teacher is not a reading specialist. And certainly after people graduate, it's very, very tough to get the kind of instruction that you would need as an adult. So the antidote to all of that is to get more kids reading by third grade. And I think there's been a lot of attention paid to having stronger reading instruction and better, higher quality reading curriculum in elementary schools. But there's also, I think, the overlooked piece in the equation is that we need to get parents up to speed on what they can do to feed reading before kids even get to school, because there's so much brain development and growth that happens with babies. And parents foster that.
Yeah, you note that research shows that vast cognitive disparities appear in infants as young as 9 months old.
Yeah, so there's just a lot of, we underestimate, and it's only in more recent years that we've had the research to demonstrate some of these differences. And it doesn't mean that a child is doomed to illiteracy because of something that's going on with them at 9 months. But it does mean that there are differences, and when there are differences, there are opportunities to do better. And so I think we just need more people spreading the message to parents that you can have a huge impact in your child's literacy and life trajectory by having intentional conversations with them from day one when you bring them home from the hospital, and that, you know, that nurturing relationship and those back and forth exchanges, even before they can talk, that contributes to their language development, which in turn contributes to their literacy growth.
Maya also finds that there is a sizable vocabulary and languaging processing gap in toddlers. So what can parents do to address this?
I think parents have to recognize their power to make a difference in their child's life. And so we often get the message, read to them every night, have books around the house, take them to the library. And those are critical, really important things. But parents should know what they're doing and accomplishing with those books and with those interactions. Mm-hmm. You're building vocabulary, you're building sound awareness, you're teaching your child things about print and letters, and all of that supports them being able to make the connections between letters and sounds that they'll need to read. So I think most parents, if they knew that they had that power and that they could exercise it with something as simple as talk, they would do it for sure.
Now, in our previous conversation with Lamar White, who was on before you, we talked about how politics has become grimmer and grimmer. And sometimes we view learning in that way. We view it as a grim process. And I think you provide an analysis that makes a lot of sense, that if learning is fun, it not only becomes something more enjoyable, but something more productive as well.
Absolutely. So many parents had challenging experiences in school, and so they don't want to think of themselves as their child's teacher. But you can be your child's teacher without drills. You can be your child's teacher without workbooks and flashcards and kind of these intense learning sessions. And you can be your child's teacher without lecturing them. It really is about those little things you do at mealtime, bedtime, bath time, and throughout the day that make a difference. And having when you tune into what's really specifically going on with your child at a particular age and stage, mm-hmm. it's more fun for you because yeah. you see all the miracles of what they're learning.
The book from Maya Payne Smart is Reading for Our Lives, A Literary Action Plan from Birth to Six. Now, it is hard to catch up, and many Americans who can read, adults, they don't read. They don't read books. They read as little as they can, just enough to get by, and they read road signs and maybe a few headlines in the newspaper and some box scores here and there. But other than that, they don't read a lot. And what does that say about our society?
I think it's a real missed opportunity, because the reality is that what's required of us as readers has gotten more and more sophisticated in recent years. And we have all these agreements we're asked to sign anytime we download an app on our phone or do any of the things we do in daily life. We are consenting to things that we don't understand and haven't read. So there's sort of the practical basic level of reading you need to navigate and drive and follow signs. But there is also the more sophisticated reading you need to understand the employment contract you signed or your apartment lease or legislation that you're voting on in an election. So it's a missed opportunity when we don't continue to hone and develop our reading skills.
Trish in Grand Coteau, please be brief. You're on with Maya Smart. Hi, Trish.
Hi. Good morning. I'm an avid reader. I mean, the only thing to do in my little teeny town where I grew up was to go to the summer library reading program, and they had air conditioning. Anyway, I read a little snippet that if you start to read to your child when they're even a baby, they associate books with love. Mm-hmm. And
all right, we're short on time, but I think that's a good acknowledgement. Books with love.
Yes, absolutely. I haven't seen specific scientific research that says that, but I think experience shows that babies will associate that time spent with you bonding and reading the book will have a positive association.
Well, Maya, we look forward to another visit sometime. It's an important book, Reading for Our Lives, and I would be remiss not to note that your husband's a pretty good basketball coach.
Yes, he is.
At Marquette University. Warriors won the national title in the year of 1977 under the great Al McGuire, and it's quite a team with Shaka Smart and Maya Smart. And Maya, congratulations on your work, and we look forward to talking with you again.
Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Take care. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and from Jerry Lane Chevrolet. Until tomorrow, for Robin Dow, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.